In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in
3, 2, 1.
Are you as shocked by the blast at the end of that every time I am? And this is just for people who are probably seeing this on YouTube and not the audio version. But every time that explosion at the end of the song kicks in, I'm shocked before we do the entrance. Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh. And with me, as always, is, my summertime good guy, my dude who's rolling through the books with me, my podcast pal, the one, the only,
kaboom! That scary, Josh. Travis Ratz here.
It's frightening, just frightening. The blast at the end of that, folks. Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis Ratz and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades. And this is the last book for the summer. We've made it through June. We've made it through July. We have read 6 graphic novels for graphic novel summer, taking us away from our normal trade route, the normal authors and artists that we look at all the time, and giving us something different. And we've ended with the book Mama Came Calling by Ezra Clayton Daniels, illustrated by Camilla Suker. And I am probably saying that last name wrong. This was put out by HarperCollins. So this is the interesting thing about the books we've done. We're like, this was put out by Harcourt Mifflin, McGregor, yeah, whatever.
They're like textbook companies.
Yeah. Well, like real publishers, right? Like real Penguin publishers and stuff like that. And not comic book publishers. And so we read the book Mama Came Calling. Mama Came Calling. And Travis Ratz, can you set the scene for our listeners about what this book is about? If you could just get it to
sure
us.
Sure. Well, the setting happens. Imagine, picture this. You're in the Florida swamps, and you're a young biracial woman named Kira who suffered trauma in her childhood when a man, or should I say, something with a gator head, crawled through her window and attacked her. Now, the police thought, and everyone thought, it was her father, so they locked her father up. Her mother later dies. Kira goes into social work, and that kind of is where our story unfolds. We enter following a young adult who works as a social worker in a social home, and her father visits her, trying to convince her that he did not indeed try to kill her. She doesn't believe him. The father dies, and Kira has to go about figuring out the mystery of who is this gator man? Was it her father? And she's got like a cast of characters, including her boss, George, at the social, at the home she works in. One of the elder kids who's got kind of a chip on their shoulder, who is also part of this cast. We have a young man. Intentions are revealed murky. Not to be what they murky. Yeah, that's a good swamp word. And we get a kind of what the book describes as a swamp noir.
Yes, swamp noir. And so we get the tale of trying to figure out why she was attacked when she was younger. Why is the gator man after her now? Who is the one who's coming after her? And like you said, we get this cast of characters that kind of lead us through this. A pretty, you know, indie art style, blacks and whites and yellows, kind of a mustardy yellow color that gives us a swamp gas color, if you will. Mm. Kind of like a mustardy swamp gas as we make our way through this book. Travis Ratz, we have this cast of characters. We have this noir. We have this a story that kind of, you know, reading a you know, some interviews with Clayton and about his work, that is really steeped in kind of him dealing with being biracial himself, being black and white, dealing with sort of the sort of evils in the past of his white half being black, balancing that out. And we get a very similar story for our main character here, Kira, as she's battling with the white side of her family and what that heritage is, and the black side of her family. And then the main crux of this is really around this candy fortune that was based on this candy called Gator Bait, which was black licorice. And to read some of the interviews, and again, I mean, I was a history teacher, but there are large swaths of history that you don't get into, but this was a real thing. There were candy companies, and it was a large, it was kind of a something that was used a lot in the South, was the idea of using black babies for bait, for catching gators. And just this kind of very just gross,
overt, no hiding it, racism, yeah, and just like evilness, really.
Right,
is,
really.
It goes beyond race, and just like, this is like an evil entity, the someone who would promote the even the idea of feeding,
right,
human beings to gators.
It's like the copper tone baby, but you replace the baby having fun running away from a dog with a alligator eating
I thought the dog was trying to drag the girl into the ocean.
I thought
that was the equivalent. I gotta send some apology letters to Copper Tone.
It's this very like, you take, so I th- it comes out of this idea. He's talking about how he started this idea, and it started to surface for him in 2016 when Trump was elected. And then he talks about, you know, being in the South and learning about this candy and this idea. And he wrote an article. I can't remember what I read the article. He writes about alligator Alcatraz, right? The sort of detention center that they were building in Florida. And for you and I, who aren't from that part of the South, have never seen this idea of alligators and the swamps being used. I mean, it's a terrible thing anyways. Alligator Alcatraz, just the idea of it is a gross idea. But then when you learn, and I learned from that article that you wrote about just the historical nature of using alligators for that, you know, that racist implication of, yeah, no, this was a continual thing in the South of black children being used. You could get postcards with it on there, like this whole sort of thing around it. This very disturbing idea takes a whole nother layer to what's going on. And so he's using that as he writes this story. And he talks about how, I read one where he's talking about how he usually is a side character, is his proxy in the story about how he deals with emotions. But in this one, he says that Kira is his proxy in this. He's putting his emotions and his feelings into that character, as Kira is dealing with kind of the two sides of her being and just trying to figure out, why is someone after her? What's going on? Mm. So let's dive into the noir, Travis. What did you think of our mystery in this story?
Well, I want to go, because I think for me, what you just said about that whole historical real being used, and that being a one kind of artifact of the extreme racism in America and the South, and remnants of that existing still in these stores. So I when I was exploring schools, I went to the Florida schools the summer before graduation, and we drove through Florida looking at those schools, and we stopped in one of those gator farms there. Like, and it looks straight out of like Central Casting, right? Just got the big carnival-like signs, and you go in there, they got a bunch of gators, and they'll feed them. But the gift shop is where they make their money, and they have this huge gift shop with everything, you know, gator this, whatever it was on there.
Yeah.
And so it felt very kitschy, felt very carnival-like. But, you know, you look enough at those shelves and you move a couple items, you're like, oh, what is this? You know, like, I'm not saying that place sold gator bait candy, but those small little tiny remnants they still pepper like consumerism and capitalism. And so to take something like that as a seed to a story, as a way to discuss and storytell about your own trials and tribulations of being biracial and being that racism was such a really kind of cool thing to build a story around. Now, yeah, your question. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think kind of it lets you know. And I think being able to read that interview with him was really enlightening to like what informed him to take this dive into this. Right. And I think had I not read that, I think I would have missed some layers of the story. Right. Like we're two white guys reading this. Right. We don't have that, you know, we don't have that lens to it, and we can't speak to that lens to it, but it was really helpful to kind of read his kind of where it came from, right? To be able to get a better understanding of his point of view and his mindset as he was writing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, so for me, the county in this story is very much a character, like Asbury County, because it kind of is the stand-in for those small counties that are just kind of off the grid and don't get a lot of attention or policing of social norms and niceties and decency sometimes in some areas, some people. But the noir aspect that you're asking about on here, honestly, you said this last week, and I know this book is promoted a swamp noir. I didn't really feel noir in the sense that I typically think of noir. Yes, it may be more the atmosphere. I could see that, especially when we have the arts like the grays on there. But to me, this felt like Southern crime folk horror.
Yeah, you know? I would agree with you on that.
Yeah. I was missing that kind of some of those trappings of noir that I would want to classify it as noir, like the narration, the detective or more investigative protagonists. They do some investigating, but you know, there is a femme fatale type character. All those things
in the reverse, right? It's the male fatale character. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just the dialogue in general. So I get it. If you look, I guess I can connect the dots and say noir, but I feel like everything would be just all those little elements. You'd be like, yeah, I could see that. That's borderline. Yeah. So I really connected to the folk horror aspects of it when it came to the Gator Man. And for me, I thought that was more genre defining for this book.
And I also think like a really interesting sort of like, I always like when we get books like this or stories like this or movies like this, that villain, right? That monster, if you will, right? Like who is that character? You know, we grew up in the 90s where you've got like the Scream mask and you've got like, I Know What You Did Last Summer, like the, you know, the guy with the hook and the, you know, the yellow.
It was Old Man Crothers who owns the carnival.
Or kids who grew up on Scooby-Doo, right? Like who's the man behind the mask? What is the character behind the mask? I thought Gator Man was an incredibly like effective, horror piece, right? Like a great, like monster idea that someone would put on that gator suit in order to like kill, and it's steeped, like you said, in that folk tale horror, right? That gator man would come get you, you know, get black children, and just a very sort of like visceral man versus nature, but turn that nature even worse into like it's not the desire to kill is not animalistic. It's human, which doesn't follow
right part of the brain.
Right. A very effective use of the character. And the fact that you don't get him a lot in this is also very good. Right. The Gator Man shows up a couple times, you know, very early on when you see that first scene, a little later. And then at the very end, you don't get like, oh, Gator Man killed another person. Gator Man. You know what I mean? We're not dragged through that. It's used very viscerally through the story, which I thought was an effective way to use that character.
Absolutely. And there's something just horrific about the aesthetic of the gator. Now, I'm not a gator hater. I'm sure there are people like, they're beautiful creatures. You know, like the people who are like, great white sharks. I'm like, yes. Like, we should probably conserve them. And like, we're not going to be brutal to a species of animal. But like, I'm not kissing up on a gator. And there's something about the shape of their head when you take that picture directly and put it onto a, you know, a bipedal human, and you shoot it at a distance or you draw it at a distance just in the shadows of a tree, and then the outline of the head suggests so much, something so much more horrific than just the shadow of a regular man. You know, if it was Dracula at a distance, that just looks like a man. A mummy, it's just like a man. Even a wolf man is still, but there's something about the shape of that head, and that when it's put through a window in the background, like when this book opens up, one of the first scenes you get is this split. I'm sure it was split. I read it digital, but I'm sure when you get it both pages, is three consecutive big full spreads of Kira playing in her living room. And then through that window, you see nothing in the window. The very distance, you see something closer, a weird shape, and then closer. And then finally we get this the splash page of just like that man in that gator
the window,
mask.
Right? And her shadow, like looking out the window, gator man coming through that. Oh, I zoomed in. That I thought that was a really, you kind of see it build page to page to page, and then you see him crawl through. Super creepy.
And we just had of book starts this summer. Organisms from Ancient Cosmos, that plane crashing, to I personally really loved In. I talked about the water slide being stuck in that bowl, to last week with the seeds being dropped in, a guy getting his head bludgeoned, and this week the Gator Man. These graphic novels know how to kick off a story.
They do. And I would say that that was a very effective. And that's why I think I lean more to your like folk horror on this than noir. Right. Like, yes, it's a mystery they're trying to solve. But in reality, this is very much it plays into that slasher flick sort of thing, except the creature, the monster, the man doesn't play a big piece of it throughout. Right. He's not continually showing up and killing her friends like you would see in, you know, Freddy Krueger, Jason, Michael Myers. But this is that opening scene is an opening scene from any horror movie, right?
Yeah.
Like that's exactly what it is. And it plays so well that I really did. I was like, okay, I'm in. You're right. It set the scene for what this book is. And the book does take like a hard turn. And you're like, okay, where are we getting to? Where's the mystery? Where is this coming at? Because we get that. And then we shift to her being older. Right. And you're like, okay, where is Jack? Right. Cause all you can't grow up and escape this. That's not how this happens. And so I really did enjoy it. What did you think of the twist about, I mean, spoiler alert, about kind of the femme fatale, the femme, you know, the man fatale in this book? Is it Sadal?
Something like, it starts with an S for sure. What Josh is talking about, if you read the book, then you know that, Kira, there is, I mean, potential, it's a femme fatale, right? It's a potential love interest that she thinks is just there working as an intern, as a social worker, who turns out an author who's writing a book on Gator Man.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's kind of the red herring, right? As far as you think, oh, this must be the Gator Man, but we all know that's not the way these stories work on here. To be honest, for that part on there, I mean, it was nice that there were some dimensions to the story where not everything was straightforward. And you do wonder who's behind that gator mask. I didn't, once he explained it, like I didn't find it was uncool for him to do, but it didn't feel like the betrayal that, you know, like, you know, he explains himself very quickly and he apologizes profusely. And she's not immediately or directly negatively affected by his actions. Even at the end, she's like, I'm not going to, you can write the book. I'm not going to give you an interview. And he's like, cool. I get that completely. Right.
Yeah.
So there wasn't the sense that to me, he never really appeared as a main antagonistic force. I never thought he was the Gator Man.
There's only like two pages where you're like, okay, who is this kid? Right. But not, they didn't draw it out very long. And he explains himself really quick. Like, my mom's a writer. I'm helping her write this book. I took the job here. you only get a couple pages where she's like, George, her boss, where did you find this guy? And he's like, oh, he said he'd work for free. And she's like, what do you mean he'd work for free? Like, why would you just, did you do a background check on him? All this stuff. But then really quick, she confronts him and he goes, oh, this is why. Right.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, that's a very Scream. I mean, how many of those are there? Like 7 Scream movies. And that's a very like, I'm writing the book about the killer. You know, like, well, I know he killed.
The Scream moment is when he's scuba diving and she looks at his phone and he's recorded every one of her conversations. Right. That's right. Like you said, you nailed it. Like that's a real Scream moment where all of a sudden the Scream protagonist is like questioning their boyfriend. Well,
yeah.
There's no way it could be you. Why do you have all these?
Yes.
You know, what did you think about the social work stuff? Cause you know, kind of like almost a side story to this is Kira navigating the relationships at like the foster home she lives at in particular with a couple of kids, as far as what does it mean to work with young children who've had really hard lives and trauma, and what is that kind of side story to everything?
Yeah, I think her relationship with Noni, that's the main character, the with the mouth and the one who just, she's aging out. And I thought that that was a really interesting piece of it. It was kind of in the background, right? You get that moment between Noni and Kira where Kira is going like, I wasn't there for you. I'm sorry. I should have been better. I was dealing with my own stuff. I realize, right? And I think you get this nice arc. I mean, at the end, you find out that she's actually the heir to the Gator Bait fortune, right? That candy company that's hers. You find out that she's the one. She gets the big mansion that they go to at the very end, and she turns it into the home. And you get to see like, oh, Noni gets to stay and work there, and they're able to be a part of that greater family, right? I thought that was a really...
Well, she's going to college. She got into...
That's right. She gets into art school.
But she's got a home there. She could. You get the sense that she could always stay if she wanted to.
Yeah, that she gets to have a place to come back to. But I thought that was a really, you know, a sweet piece of it, but it felt not integral to the main story. I thought it would play a bigger role in there. I think you get to see... I mean, Noni plays a role. She gets to, you know, they get to be the one who like kills Gator Man at the end, right? Like gets to be the, you know, the savior, right? Like, you know, the Sadal takes the back seat. He's kicked aside, and Noni becomes the one who goes with Kira to go kind of figure out what's going on, and drags Kira to go like, no, we're going to figure this out. Don't chicken out on this. We got to figure out what this is. We're not going to let this go. So I thought that relationship was interesting. I think the idea that, you know, there's that scene where Noni's like, you said that you don't get to pick your family, but some of us have to. Some of us have to pick our family because we don't have family. And so I thought that was a really kind of, you know, sweet kind of moment. You know, Noni breaks down and is like, you didn't ever take me out, just you and me ever again. And that really hurt. Like, I just needed someone to be there for me.
It got me when she talked about like when, you know, at a home, they had to take a big van and what it feels like when you step out of one of those vans every time you go someplace and everyone's looking at you like, what are these people doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, who are they? Like, why are they in a van? Like, or like, what was me? The aspect of it. And I was like, wow, I never thought about that, you know, whether
you don't get to have a normal
special
trip.
Needs or people with a home, but when you're kind of constantly crawling in and out of those vans being moved as a unit, what does that do to you? And she talks about like, you know, I got really comfortable needing like that unit. But you're right. I think you're right in the sense that it almost felt like two stories. It almost felt like that could be a thing, right? That could be its own graphic novel and then give me more Gator Man.
Yeah. I think you have to build the story around it, right? You have to kind of tell you want to give more layers to what's going on, right?
Right.
And so you need her to have her group of people. And instead of, I hate to keep pointing to like movies that this reminds me of, but instead of it pointing to like her cast of high school best friends or her cast of, you know, other social workers she works with or other friend group, the cast of characters is the kids in the home. Right.
Right.
That's her cast of characters in here. That's her backup. And I thought it was a really kind of, you know, interesting piece of all of this. There's a lot of those red herrings along the way that you get in this murder mystery, you know, Sadal's phone, you get her going to her dad's trailer and finding the thing of bees in there and thinking that like, oh God, it was my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My dad was the person. He really was him. There's all these little bits and pieces that I thought kind of pulled the story along nicely. What did you think of the art on this? Let's dive into that piece of it. What did you think of the art, the storytelling ability of our artist here? How did you feel about that?
Well, we're looking at it. We've had quite a bit of different artists this graphic novel summer. This felt like a standout from the others on there. Some of, you know, our artists did feel like what we would typically call like, oh, that feels like 80s, like, you know, R. Crumb or 8-Ball or, you know, even a McLeod type indie comic book art. Some of it felt like last week's like, oh, this is just kind of an offshoot of like maybe some Kirby stuff on here. This felt the most, I don't know how to say this because they're all different, but what I'm trying to figure out what I want to say on here.
And this is going to sound wrong. It comes off YA graphic novel. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I don't mean that at all, but it's this cartoony style that reminds me of modern graphic novel indie, right? We talked about that other stuff, you know, looking like maybe old American Splendor or stuff like that. This looks more modern to me, more digital, right?
Yeah, you nailed it. Like, it does feel like what you get, especially when it comes to, maybe it's because, you know, there are, I don't read this as a social issue book or anything like that, but sometimes you get that for like young adult literature, where they'll tell like a heavy thematic story with comic book art like this, right? Yeah. That really, it moves. It's easy to move, you know? Not a lot of details in the background. I thought it was pretty, the characters were pretty expressive. I did find, like, with this art style, things get a little bit flat, you know? Mm-hmm. But the colors, especially with the yellows and the deep blues and blacks and grays, I felt like it really did nestle me into a certain kind of tone where especially, like I said, this county is a character for me that I'm like, oh, this is the color palette of Asbury County. And it's its own. I'm in this world of this county. It doesn't feel like anything else. So I must be in this world the author is creating. So I feel like they create something unique enough between the coloring and the art that you feel in a specific creative team's vision.
Yeah. I think it did kind of create a world. I think you're right on that. I think there are some times where I thought the art shined really well. I think Gator Man comes off even more creepy as this sort of cartoonish hulking thing, right? We talked a little bit about like removing the mask and it's old man Withers who runs the carnival, right? It has that sort of look. But there's this scene where they go to the trailer and she doesn't want to go in the trailer and she sees this little boy ride up on his bike. And there's that scene where it's so cartoony, but just the look on his face is disarming and like, just like, ugh, right. It gives you the creeps. And so I think there is something about the style being cartoony, but also kind of about something dark and evil, right. And terrifying that kind that juxtaposition is weird, but really.
That's a good point, Josh. I didn't think about it that way, that the art pulls it from you away from those horror elements. And part of me as a reader, that's what I wanted more of. I wanted more of like the Gator Man and more of the like, ooh. And the art pushes it more towards like, no, this is a book about trauma and identity and family and belonging. And so I think the art shifts thematically more to that side of the storytelling than the genre side of what we're calling Southern noir folk
horror,
you know?
Yeah. like slasher, right? I think the other piece of it is, if you think, and I might be reading too into it, and I've never actually seen the candy wrapper about this sort of the actual gator bait that he saw, but I can't imagine that was very realistic. He talks about like it was a gator with googly eyes chasing after a child. And there's something about that I go like, oh, that's a horrible thing that was stylized to be cartoony and like pleasant to look at. And then this book, which is about something terrible, is also cartoony and stylized to make it seem less terrible. Right. But in reality, yeah, what's below those cartoons and below that sort of like kitsch of it is something dark and menacing.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah, it's adopting the visual language of the inciting incident of the object, right?
I think there's one scene where they go to the gift shop outside of the sort of like Helfer Mansion, right? They go to the candy store gift shop, and it's this surprising thing where this very, no one, I mean, she changed her name. No one knows that she's the girl from the Gator Man, right? But to go inside of this store and just see a wall of Gator Man masks, you just go, oh, that is a terrifying thing, right? Like that is a, like that you have to, like putting yourself in her shoes to go like, okay, this terrible thing happened to me and people are using this terrible thing to make money, right? Like to me, I go like, oof, that's tough.
You know? You reminded me of something that actually I bookmarked on here, dealing with those gator masks. So, was it Noni.
Yeah.
So Noni, discovers like, very Scooby-Doo, like the Gator Man was like someone that they met. Well, he wasn't officially the Gator Man. That was I don't want to spoil that. I'm not even going to say who the Gator Man is. You don't need to for this book. She's got this local at gunpoint, this white guy. And she says, she's like, did you kill all those gators in that store? And he said, kid, every closet in Asperia County's got one of them masks. When the lights go out, we're all
Gator Man. Oh man, that was great. Just a great line.
Yeah. And I was just like, zoop. All right. If you didn't understand what some of the themes were delving into, it's like neon signs, neon.
Yes.
We're all, yeah.
We
doesn't
all
matter who Gator Man is
because
everyone's capable of this. It's in everyone.
Right. I thought that was,
we all got this. It's in our closet. It's in us. We all have the capacity
in this county.
Yeah.
That is like that. Like, yeah, of course. I think early on you get that feeling when they're trying to find a camp to take the kids to. And they're like, also those kids better be quiet after 10 o'clock. We don't call the police around here. And you're like, oof. Right. Like,
yeah. and then driving off, they're like, let's pick a different place. I don't want to go to a camp at a place I would shoot 10-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought this book did a really good job of kind of giving you this creepy atmosphere. After talking about it with you, I feel a little better about the art and kind of going like, okay, it is drawing. I mean, if in my mind I can place it as it's drawing from what is that sort of very, let's make it look cute, but it's not cute aesthetic of the candy wrapper, or the idea that, it's just modern modern comic booking, modern sort of art in this genre and this style of what we would consider modern indie art on it. I think I feel better about it now. I think that was the one thing where I just, that didn't hook me enough.
Yeah.
But I loved the coloring. I loved the palette, the yellows and the grays and the whites. I thought that was
the best fit. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think we've talked about that a couple times as we've gone through there, that the art has felt very important to the story of it. And this one, he talks about, like, it took him like 15 years to do his first book because he drew it. And he's like, I couldn't do that again. I had to find someone else to draw it for me. So I'm always curious. This is the first book of Indie Summer where the artist and the writer are not the same. And does that give us something different where it's not one person's sole vision on the page?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Cause you know, it's one of those things, I'm sure, if you're a visual artist, and a writer, that like those images, they're constantly at play in your head. You go to sleep at night, you know, you've been drawing and thinking about the story. The visuals contribute to the dialogue contributes to the visuals. Now we're taking that aspect and we're splitting it between two different brains, two different aesthetics, two different philosophies on how to approach it. Absolutely. You know who I wanted to should take this? It feels like a real like Jordan Peele type movie.
Oh yeah.
Like Nope or Us. Where it's got those social undertones, it feels like it's got his name all over it.
Yeah. Ezra was a writer on the Doom Patrol TV show. He was a writer on Severance, right? So he's got those chops that I'm like,
pedigree.
I think that's why this felt very like, oh, this is a TV show. This is a, you know, it almost not as detective-y, but you think of like True Detective, where it's that sort of like culty thing in a small town community. That's just this terrible thing. It had that kind of feeling to it. But I did enjoy it. I think, you know, as we look over our episode, that's going to kind of wrap up Graphic Novel Summer. As we look back on all of these, I think we've had a varying, you know, each one of these has given us a different feeling and a different like idea of what that graphic novel can be. And I've enjoyed our time with each of these.
Yeah.
Books. Yeah. All right.
Travis. I do want to say something for this book. You're not scuba diving in a Florida swamp. You won't go see shit in there. Like he's got a flashlight. I get that. That did not look like a scuba flashlight. So that thing's useless. Yeah, I just didn't buy it. It really kind of broke the reality of it all.
I mean, you are a scuba master.
I'm a scuba master, right? I was going there and I was like, there's no way. First of all, you don't need tanks to kind of hold your breath. It's not going to be that deep. You can't see anything anyways. Also, yes, gators will be a problem. Going into a swamp at night. He's like, as long as I'm not thrashing around like an animal, I'm like, no, kid, I think you're in trouble if you're going into like a
All right. So final thoughts, enjoyable read. Check it out. If you haven't checked it out. I think I got it on Kindle. You got it on Kindle. Easy to find. I think you could get the paperback version of it. I read it in two sittings. I probably could have read it in one, but I did. I stopped at part two. I stopped at part one, which is about halfway through it. Like when you get to part two. Yeah. And then parts two and three are kind of the back half of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for tuning in. You can find us on Instagram at Comic Exposure. You can find us on YouTube at Comic Exposure. You can find us on your favorite podcast app. If you're watching us on YouTube, just look for Comic Exposure. You can go to the website, comicexposure.com. We also have the merch shop, comicexposure.threadless.com. You can buy yourself some swag for the summer. As we wrap up next episode, Travis and I are putting a bow on Graphic Novel Summer, and then we'll talk about the next set of books that we're reading as we exit Graphic Novel Summer. Folks, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next trade.